WNYC is supported by Swan Galleries, with an auction of art and illustrated books October 1st, books on decoration, fashion, poster art, limited editions by Edward Gorey, and the erotic works of Gerda Wegener, on exhibit now. Catalogs and bidding at swangalleries.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Most art forgers are simply in it for the money, but not Mark Landis, who has been called one of the most prolific art forgers in U.S. history. Instead, for nearly three decades, he's given away hundreds of works, his fake Picassos, Signacs, even 15th-century icons, to institutions across the United States. And once they realized what had happened, the museum directors, the curators and registrars who'd received his forgeries wondered what his motivations were. Jennifer Grossman has co-directed a fascinating character study of Mark Landis called Art and Craft. It opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center and Lincoln Plaza Cinema. She joins us now along with her subject, Mark Landis himself. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Jennifer, had you heard of Mark before the New York Times published an article about him a few years ago?
Nope. The New York Times in January of 2011 was the first I had heard of Mark. And it was one of those articles that, you know, you rip out of the paper and put in a drawer, and then a week later I was still thinking about it. So I showed it to Sam Coleman and Mark Becker, our co-director and editor, and gave Matthew Leininger a call in Cincinnati to see if we could come film with him.
That's because the Times had reported that numerous attempts to contact Mark had been unsuccessful.
Exactly.
So you had to start with Mark, with Matthew Leininger. The Times had called him a kind of Javert to Mr. Landis's Valjean.
That definitely was a poetic reference that stuck in my head.
Now, Mark, she found you living in your mother's house in Laurel, Mississippi.
And you know, I wasn't being rude or anything. It's just that I was getting, you know, hundreds of calls from not just the New York Times, but 60 Minutes and Financial Times and all these, but it just didn't occur. I thought it was subscription drives or rating sweeps or so. I mean, it just didn't occur to me that anybody wanted to talk to me. My conscience still bothers me about all I put John Gapper at Financial Times to, because he flew from New York to New Orleans Laurel twice, but it didn't occur to me.
So why did you talk to Jennifer?
It didn't occur to me that because John Gapper led, well, actually Jennifer contacted John Gapper first, and then since I was already friends with John Gapper from when he did come to see me, that's why. Yeah.
Why did you decide to participate in the making of a film about you? Because now that you've been revealed in all of your disguises, you can't fool another museum curator, can you?
That's an easy one, because I'm like anybody my age when they retire. They really feel down, having nothing to do, and it's every old guy's fondest dream to have a couple of glamorous young filmmakers want to come and listen to them go on about their life story. I mean, most old guys corner young people and bore them to death with their life stories, whereas it was heaven sent to have a couple of people like that wanted to talk to you and let alone make a movie about, because everybody's favorite subject is their life story.
And since you're here, I assume that means you like what they did with your life story.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't be happier.
Jennifer, you've said that the story particularly resonated with you since you grew up in the art world. You had an uncle who's a sculptor, an aunt who owned a gallery, and you have an MFA in art history. Also worked at the Museum of Modern Art.
I did. I was a fundraiser for the museum for several years.
Mark, could you have imagined trying to donate one of your works to MoMA? You did give to some pretty big museums.
It was on my schedule when the scandal hit.
What were you going to give them?
But not MoMA, but the Museum of Modern Art in Los Angeles was really looking forward to seeing. That's in John Gapper's article, because they even sent me the deed to gifts beforehand to sign, and they were really looking forward to it. Then the scandal happened, because I was looking forward to going there. Of course, I really wanted to go to the Hollywood Museum, but that was kind of on the schedule, too. You know, after the
Norton Simon is pretty
anyway,
good too. But so, you did give money. You did give works to the National Portrait Gallery in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
You see the Philadelphia Museum of Art. So these are big institutions.
I had a grand time in Washington. It's beautiful.
People wondered if you were a failed artist trying to get back at
the art
world.
Certainly not. I don't. I'm not even a proper artist.
You did study.
I just like to copy. No, I did. Everybody thinks just because you went to the Chicago Art Institute. What happened was I was in the Menninger Foundation first, and I did show an ability for arts and crafts. And my doctor's idea was that I might like being a commercial artist, but because of the times, it was the early 70s, and I ended up, because of mother's fashionable friends, they wanted me to go to the Chicago Art Institute. It was a hippie school. They didn't teach you how to do anything. They just say, we want you to interpret this, not slavishly copy. So what I did was I studied photography and filmmaking, and I never got a degree anyway. And it was a hippie school, and nobody ever worked or did anything.
But the manager,
back in those days,
the manager got you started as a form of art therapy.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Now, Jennifer, some people thought that he might have been a performance artist who was questioning notions of originality and authorship, or maybe like Sherry Levine and some others, engaging in a form of art appropriation.
I think certainly people can interpret his lifelong career that way, but that's never been Mark's intentions,
if you don't mind me jumping in.
I'm not
that deep a thinker. I don't know a thing about performance art. I've never heard of this young lady. I'm not a deep thinker. I even say that at the end of the film. I haven't got any. I've got the soul of an accountant. I don't have any spiritual or social concerns I want to express in paint or anything. When I first gave a picture away to a museum as an impulse 30-something years ago, everybody was just so nice and respectful and deferential, something I'd never experienced before. And I really liked it. I got addicted to it, and I just kept doing it because I really liked being treated that way.
But you said
that's anybody can understand that.
You say that you had the soul of an accountant, but you copied some pretty difficult to copy artists, didn't you? Watteau, Bouguereau, Signac, Daumier, Milton Avery, Marie-Laurence Song.
Milton Avery. A 6-year-old can do some of those people.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. He's modest.
No, wait. You mentioned...
I used to be a painter. I couldn't have done it at 12.
Okay. Yeah, you could have done Avery at 12. Now, run the other artists by me again.
Okay, Bouguereau,
French
academic.
Him you've got to be pretty good. Yeah, okay.
Watteau.
You got to be pretty good for Watteau.
And you're seen in the film donating a Signac.
Okay,
Signac,
a talented junior high schooler could do it. Okay,
no, but they do represent a wide range of styles in a number of different mediums. And you also provide all the proper paperwork. You also forged that.
Well, not just the catalog reference. Yeah.
Now, you filmed him, Jennifer, coming through a Hobby Lobby store in a strip mall.
Yes.
Looking for frames and painting supplies, and then working on the forgeries. To somebody at home, the thought of a Watteau being donated in a Hobby Lobby frame seems a bit shocking, but it didn't seem to bother these museum directors.
You know, we only heard what we heard from Mark and Matthew Leininger, other than the, you know, one time we were filming. And I think, you know, people keep things in all sorts of frames, so I don't know that that was necessarily the tell.
Anyway, I used to bang them up and pour coffee on them and stuff.
And
like
you put
that.
Coffee on the paper as well. So
yeah, and on the
old
frames too, and bang them up some, you know, with a file.
My guests are Mark Landis, who is the subject of a new film called Art and Craft. Jennifer Grossman is its co-director. It opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center and Lincoln Plaza Cinema. You had to do all sorts of other things. You had to cut wood to the exact dimensions and then sand and stain it to make it look aged. And then what did you do? You used a photocopy to work from? Or did you paint on top of the photocopy?
Well, no, on the wood. Oh, okay. I used to get those boards at Home Depot, and my grandfather was the manufacturing VP for Auburn Automobile in the 20s, and I think that's kind of in my genes, you know, because he believed in the assembly line, and that's why I did so many of the same thing, because it's like a cooking cliche about easier to cook for so many than one. So, like, if I'd buy a board, you could saw it in the 6-inch lengths, and you could get 3 or 4 out of it. That's why I do, and I could do them all at once. Because if there's any such thing as attention deficit disorder, I've got it. I have to get things done really fast while I'm watching TV.
And you do work very fast.
By the time the movie's over, I like to have it all done.
You have the TV on all the time in the background while you're doing this. Did none of these museum directors realize that they were getting the same exact picture that 4 other museums got?
Well, they did later on. But that's something I never really thought about. I was just happy, you know, because I just would think about, you know, the visit. And then once I left, I stopped worrying about it.
And because what about watching your work hanging next to a real masterpiece?
Oh, I didn't see that.
You never visited them?
You know, I was usually happy. As long as I was long gone by the time they got around to doing all that. Yeah.
Jennifer, Mark has never been prosecuted or arrested because, as Robert Whitman, the founder of the FBI art crime team, explains in your film, it can only be deemed as an act of ego satisfaction.
Everyone interprets it differently.
Do people want to send him to jail?
I think, you know, I'm sure some people have thought about it. You know, the definition of fraud is that there has to be monetary damage in order to prosecute, and since Mark has been donating these and not asking for anything in return, you know, it puts it in that gray area.
It's only embarrassment.
I'm sure there is some.
That ego satisfaction thing. It sounds bad, but you know, it's true. Because look, I mean, everybody likes having a boost to their self-esteem. Everybody likes being treated with respect and friendship. It gives you a boost of self-esteem, and we all like to be liked and respected. So you could put it like, it sounds kind of bad when you talk about an ego, but it's true. Unfortunately, it's true of everybody. We all like to be liked.
You also forged documents from John Hancock, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln.
I didn't do Abraham Lincoln. Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. I used to do the campaign ribbons. Yeah.
Why those? And this is different from doing a painting.
Oh, well, different museums and libraries and institutions collect different things, you know.
So you would focus on an institution and say, I'll do something for them?
Obviously, a historical museum or something. If you're in a city, you may as well. See, if I go to New York, you know, which is the biggest one there is. I mean, I probably have to stay here a while, but in cities that aren't so big, you know, they might just have the one art museum, but then they'd have other museums, but those museums would be interested in collecting historical memorabilia, hence things like campaign ribbons and letters and that sort of thing. That's all.
The reason some people thought of you as perhaps being a performance artist, because when you were posing as a philanthropic donor, you went as a number of different people, including Father Arthur Scott, a Jesuit priest.
Oh, well, that's easy. I was watching the Swan on TV, and it occurred to me that wealthy families would have a priest in the family, you know. And not only that, a priest would even be more likely to want to donate an inheritance.
You know? Jennifer, you found – and somebody you wanted to get a blessing from him.
I enjoyed being a priest. I helped people.
Yeah, you obviously look like you're enjoying putting on the clerical collar. Mm. What most people wanted to know, Jennifer – was Mark's personal history and how it informed his career as an art forger. And you've said he's been through a lot of hardship in his life in terms of his familial circumstances, his mental health issues. Is that how you explain his reasons for doing what he's done?
I try not to explain Mark's reasons. I think he says it best for himself. But certainly, I think with everyone, you know, your personal history is going to inform your choices in your life.
You, Mark, you seem genuinely troubled by the idea that you caused anyone harm.
Some
of them were upset.
I certainly didn't intend to, no.
But didn't all of the museum directors and curators say they wanted you to stop when they found out what had been happening?
I'm sorry, what was that?
They wanted you to stop. You stopped?
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
Jennifer, can you tell us about Matthew Leininger, the registrar who set out to expose Mark's activities?
Sure. So Matt has, he made it his mission to get Mark to stop, and he worked on this exhibition of Mark's work. And then since then, he's had a number of different jobs. He's no longer in the museum world, and he's currently actually working for Amazon.
You financed this film through a Kickstarter campaign. Did you have to do that? Because you have a record, you've made other films.
It's
couldn't
true.
Go to normal funding sources?
We did. We started with several grants from Catapult Film Foundation, Jerome Foundation, Tribeca, Sundance. So we did. We were very lucky in the grant sphere, and then did have to do a Kickstarter to raise the final bit. It's very challenging to fundraise for documentaries these days.
But you must be gratified at the response that the film has gotten so far.
It's been wonderful.
And Mark, what are you doing now that you're not taking up all your time doing forgeries?
If you don't mind, on that last one, it all sounded kind of complicated, but about, you know, when you're talking about reasons and things, it's really just as simple as I'd never really been treated with any particular kind of respect or deference or friendship. Actually, none at all, really. And then when it happened, I got addicted and used to it. That's
people were so grateful
to you for giving them
these wonderful works.
It gave me a boost, yeah.
I hope this has given you a bit of a boost coming on our show.
Which I guess anybody can understand, right? You know, and it has indeed. Yes, it's been a big honor. There you go. The door of opportunity opens both ways. Wheel of life has many spokes and so on.
Mark Landis or Father Scott or whatever.
Monsignor, I got promoted.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
I've been promoted.
Well, I'll show due deference to you. Jennifer Grossman co-directed this film. It's called Art and Craft, and it opens at the Angelica Film Center and Lincoln Plaza Cinema tomorrow. Thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, indeed.